Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Lee on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org.
Sarah, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Sarah Drasner. I work as a consultant and I speak and give workshops and stuff. I also write for CSS Tricks. I'm formerly the manager of UX design and engineering at Trulia, which is part of Zillow Group. I'm excited to be here.
Welcome. And Evan, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. I'm Evan Yu, and I'm the author of Vue.js. I used to work at Google Creative Lab and Meteor previously, and now I just work on Vue.js full-time. Thanks to all the sponsors and community support, which I'm really appreciative of.
Great. Well, welcome to the show. First of all, I just want to say thank you all for all your contributions to both the open source community and trying to educate the developers on various things that you've done, Sarah. We all really appreciate the time and the effort that you put into your work.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
So Vue.js, that is the subject of this show. Since you are the creator, Evan, would you like to give us a brief intro of Vue.js and how it all got started?
Sure. So if you've never heard of Vue.js, it's one of those JavaScript frameworks that help you build applications, web applications. So most of the time when we talk about JavaScript framework, we'd assume it's focused on like the more complex types, like single page applications. Vue kind of tried to cater to a wider range of use cases. The original design was trying to keep it as minimal as possible so that it can be just directly dropped into a page and you can use it just for a simple enhancement to a static page. Or if you want to build more complex applications, you incrementally put more tools and supporting libraries into the mix, which gives you a more powerful combination that helps you handle more complexity. So that's the whole idea behind the framework. The slogan on the website is called a progressive framework. And the whole idea is we design it to from the ground up to be incrementally adoptable. So you can start with something that's really, really simple, really minimal, and it's easier to get started that way. And you gradually learn more pieces of the framework and learn how to put them together to build something that's bigger and more ambitious.
Cool. And when did Vue all start?
It's actually a long story, right? I started working on it. The first commit was late 2013 when I was still working at Google Creative Lab. But at that time, it was just totally a random experiment. I was working on a lot of quick UI prototypes at that time. And some of them, we used Angular in it. And it just felt too cumbersome. Angular was too cumbersome for those specific use cases. Mm-hmm. It just had brought in a lot of things that we didn't actually need. And I thought, but there was some things I actually really liked about it, like the data binding, the way that you update the state and things just, you know, you don't need to worry about imperatively manipulating the DOM anymore. So that part is really good. So I figured, is it possible to kind of extract these valuable parts, but, you know, expose it in a package that's more minimal, that's easier to drop into any use case that I wanted. So that's the initial idea. So I started working on it, and it wasn't even named Vue at that time. It was basically a small, crappy version of Angular, and I experimented with how the reactivity would work. So Angular used dirty checking, but I was thinking, since most of my stuff only needs to run in Chrome, so I was like, okay, I can use some ES5 features. I don't need to support IE8. So I used a different approach of defining getters and setters on data objects and tried to, and it turns out it worked pretty well. So um, So it remained a small personal project for a while. And eventually I open sourced it in February 2014. That was the first like initial public launch. And I sent a post to Hacker News and it got upvoted to the front page, luckily. So it stayed there for a few hours and I think it got me like 600 or so stars in the first week, which I was like super excited about at that time. So someone was actually paying attention to this little like project that I made. Remained a personal project for a very long time. But steadily there were more users using it and I also made new versions. It was kind of like it served as some place where I experiment with all these ideas or improvements that I want to make. So for example, when I read other people's code or when I look at a new upcoming framework and I see these good ideas or good coding practices, and I may not have the chance to actually apply them to the actual day job that I was doing, but I can try to apply them into Vue. So it was kind of like this place where I was able to just hone all these new ideas or skills that I learned and try to create this thing that I'm constantly polishing it to you get the idea.
Yeah.
So that kind of continued for maybe a year or two. And close to version 0.12, I did a complete rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first complete rewrite that sort of improved the code structure, the build pipelines and all that. And that's when it started to get more attention. In 2014 or 15, I think in 2015, the Laravel community started to pick it up. I think Taylor Otwell was trying out React and he didn't like it. And then he found out Vue and he was like, oh, this is what I'm looking for.
Mm.
So that's when the Laravel community started paying attention to Vue and Jeffrey Wei of Laracast made a whole series on how to use Vue, and it kind of sparked a lot of interest in the framework. And that's kind of the moment when I kind of started to feel, oh, like there is more potential in this thing because Laravel is a huge community and the influx of new users just because of that was kind of mind-blowing to me at that time. So I started working on it a bit more and released version 1.0 in late 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the kind of, I guess, a big design wrap-up where we kind of consolidated on a bunch of things. And basically, the project was no longer experimental. It was something that we consider pretty good, pretty stable. People can use it in production. Then it went upwards from there, and we did 2.0. That was last year. 2.0 was another complete rewrite and introduced a bunch of new capabilities. We now use a virtual DOM. We support server-side rendering, even native rendering. So after 2.0, the growth rate was kind of... It just kept growing. I'm honestly pretty surprised of how fast it's been growing because I remember back in early 2016, there was a post in the Chinese developer community discussing what framework will win in 2016 or 17. And at that time, there was one guy that I know, he wrote a post saying, I predict that Vue will be sort of on the same level with Angular and React by the end of 2016. And I replied, no, I don't think so. I don't think that's possible.
Well, look where we're at now.
It was honestly a pretty crazy ride. I never expected to be this popular today, to be honest. Yeah,
I think I saw a post today that was like, at the time, you know, Vue has 3/4 the amount of stars as React, but hasn't been around as long. And then that it has double the amount that of Angular on GitHub. And I was like, that kind of makes sense to me in terms of like tracking popularity of frameworks.
Yeah.
Like GitHub stars, of course, is like a little bit different from adoption and like the size of the community. But it does kind of track excitement around frameworks.
But, you know, frankly, even Misko Harvey, the father of Angular, even he said that he never imagined Angular would be as popular as it is now. I think when the technology is good and when there are a lot of good ideas, it's a lot more likely that people will gravitate towards a project, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I definitely want to echo what you were saying about using defined properties and getters and setters. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't really think that JavaScript is capable of doing that. But it's very common in class-based systems, like for example, in the Apple ecosystem with Objective-C and Cocoa. And we actually use that heavily for data binding as well for a framework that I worked on called Montage. And just to give the listeners who might not be familiar with that pattern, if you have a controller that controls, say, pagination of a list, instead of saying next page or previous page, you can actually just set the page number. And in the setter, you can have the logic to actually paginate. So it's actually a lot more intuitive to use that component. You don't have to say, give me the next page. You can just say, I want page 4 or I want page 10. So yeah, I definitely like that a lot as well.
Yeah, getters and setters opened up some really interesting like metaprogramming capabilities, and but it also came with some limitations that we're exploring right now that could potentially be completely overcome with ES6 proxies. But unfortunately, that might bring some very small breaking changes to the API. So it's an idea that we've been brewing. I already have a branch that's like somewhat working with that. And I think it's really a matter of browser support at this point. So whenever all major browsers support proxies out of the box, we are just going to probably drop that.
Yeah, the other interesting thing I thought you mentioned is the difference between Angular and React and Vue. The philosophical difference of a very much of a battery included, all batteries included framework versus something a lot more lightweight like Vue. I think it draws a very different audience and it attracts a lot of people, I guess, including Sarah, right? So Sarah, you've been a fairly newcomer to Vue. What are some of the reasons that drew you to Vue.js?
Well, I've been working with React pretty heavily for a little while. People always want me to pick one when they ask that question.
Sure.
You know, it's like, which do you like better? I definitely still work with both. I'm on a React project right now. Something that really drew me into Vue and that I think is really elegant is its flexibility. People tend to think that simple means that you can't do a lot, but I think that Vue is incredibly powerful and just as powerful, like in terms of creating a general store and doing all of the like state manipulation. But the simplicity makes it very easy to read. It makes it very easy to read and understand like how to work with it. I think as a maintainer, you can jump into somebody's code and understand like immediately what's going on, which for me means a lot, especially as a consultant. You know, I can get thrown into code bases that I'm not very familiar with. And having differences, just like small, you know, small things like having differences between computed and methods and filters, like really immediately communicate what intent is for each of those things. And so I guess like the really powerful thing to me about it is that the simplicity is in the way that the code is written and communicated. It's as if somebody is saying a sentence that clearly communicates really, really vital information that you need. You know, you don't want them to like, I'm maybe doing this right now, but like, you don't want somebody to like ramble on for something that, you know, can be very succinct. And that's something that really attracts me to Vue. And just from working with it right out of the bat, that was something that I really enjoyed about it. Aside, and like another small thing that I will tack on to that is that I work with animations and SVG a lot. And I think that the way that the DOM works and the way that animations work in Vue is particularly, like, having worked with it in some other different frameworks, that piece is particularly elegant to me. I don't feel like it's, you know, I'm never like fighting with it. It's like always working with me. And I think that there are some pieces and other frameworks that haven't quite got there yet that Vue has handled pretty well.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that. So I kind of want to like mention, because when I was working at Google Creative Lab, we did a lot of the prototypes that we did involved a lot of fancy animations and transition effects and all that. A lot of time I spent there was trying to recreate some of the After Effects animations that my coworkers made with just replicate them with pure web technologies. So it has always been really important to me to create an API that allows people to still be able to create these, you know, very richly interactive animations while still being able to think in a relatively declarative fashion. So you want to build these animations. A lot of times we have to do something very imperative to get those complex animations done. But I've been trying pretty hard to find a pattern that allows you to do all that while retaining this state-driven mindset when you're doing animation.
Yeah, and I think that it does do that really well. Something that I think is really impressive about it is that, like, you know, you can kind of tell a lot about a framework in some ways by the way that it handles animation, because it's kind of similar, if not the same thing, as the way that it handles asynchronous work. Like, I mean, animations in a lot of ways is like how you handle and manipulate the DOM, but you have to deal with the aspect of time. It's like another dimension of complexity. It always seems like animation should be fluff, but it's actually fairly complex sometimes, especially if you're working with observables and watchers and things like that. So you can kind of get a sense of like how deeply you can manipulate and watch and look at things changing over time or loading data. I mean, of course, there's always like different ways of doing that. And especially like Vuex has really, really nice ways of handling asynchronous data as well. But like, what I guess I'm trying to say is that like animations tend to be overlooked as like fluffy add-ons. But in terms of DOM manipulation, especially in the virtual DOM, animations are a fairly complex feature. And so the way that they work in there is like kind of reflective to me of some of the ways that the whole thing is put together.
Yeah, I definitely think that's very important as well. And I think it has a lot to do with your education and background, Evan.
Yeah.
I think for Angular, when it first started, it didn't have any facilities for animation. But ng-anime later became a very crucial piece of both Angular 1 and Angular 2. And I feel like in the React community, I feel like that's something that React is still can improve upon, because the animation facilities that come with React probably will be pulled out of it and worked on separately and hasn't really improved for quite a while. And there was something really cool called React Motion, which is more physics-based. But it also hasn't seen a lot of activity. But I do think that as applications get more complex and the user's demand for UI and UX increase in the future, that is definitely going to be a big piece that anyone will look in any framework.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons Vue ships with transition and animation support pre-bundled. I've considered making it an add-on, but after using it for a while, I just feel like support for basic transitions when you change toggle a piece of state is so crucial if you want to build anything that's pleasant to the user. So I just decided to keep it in core or all the time. Yeah,
and I think that the transitions component is actually simple enough to work with that it's not, there's no big hurdle for, I think, for like, there's no like a giant learning curve. You have the CSS hooks, you have the, you know, JavaScript hooks, so you kind of have some flexibility over which one you want to work with. And then you have these really nice sugary add-ons of the in-out modes, which I think are like one of my personal favorite things about Vue, because I think, you know, any time you animate anything, you eventually get into a thing of like something's appearing, something else is disappearing. What happens when those two things are occurring in the DOM? And a lot of other frameworks just kind of like throw up their hands and they're like, you figure it out. What I love about Vue, and I think, again, like this isn't just the in-out modes. It like the in-out modes are really nice because it actually allows you to just plug into, you know, really, really simple commands that allow you to pick how you want that to work. But that is reflected again and again over like conditional rendering and just like the stuff that I feel like as developers we're constantly rebuilding in every single you know app that we ever work in. I've definitely always needed a for loop for the state of the thing, and like just having a v4 is like really, you know, and I know, you know, Angular has things like that, but the thing that Vue does really well for me is it kind of picks all of the best parts that I really liked about the other frameworks, and it puts them all in one place. So I kind of don't have to choose, which is nice.
Well, while keeping it simple, I think that's actually really crucial. Hopefully we don't see a lot of like 10,000 line classes in Vue, right? Yeah.
It's a very, very delicate balance in determining the scope of the framework. So I think I'm constantly fighting a battle of like keeping it simple versus pulling in more things into the framework. Sometimes users would make feature requests and I would reject it because I feel like it could be easily done in user land. Sometimes I would add this feature because I feel like it's crucial, but it just takes non-trivial effort for anyone to do it. And if different users gonna replicate the same thing over and over again, then maybe we should provide a, you know, default way to do that. But everything is kind of case by case, and you kind of have to think really hard about everyone you add to the framework to make sure you don't bloat it. At the same time, you make them happy by finding something that's already there.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of interesting, especially if you look at like how many different ways there are to do this, to do something, you know, based on use cases. I feel like you've added a lot of like flexibility in terms of the Vue instance. There's so many ways of creating a Vue instance or creating a component so that it remains really flexible. But then, you know, making a cutoff seems like it would be a tough decision sometimes because there are a million different use cases too on the web.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about data handling. I feel like over the past couple of years, the way people think about data handling has changed quite a bit, especially after Redux came out and introduced people to a lot of the concepts. How for a beginner, how would you introduce data handling in Vue?
So in Vue, I usually think of it as a two-tier problem, similar to when you introduce people to Redux. Dan has said Flux is like glasses. You know it when you need it, but maybe you don't even need it at all. So that's the same thing for Vue. Like there is this sort of like base experience of just everything is super simple. Like you have an object, you give it to a Vue instance, it becomes reactive. So whenever you mutate it, things just update. And this is actually really helpful when you are building prototypes or trying to get doing a proof of concept, because it aligns with how we think about stuff. When we want to change something in the interface, there's some corresponding state that should have changed. I know it's getting immutability and functional programming is getting much more popular today, but eventually, if you think about the way Redux handles data, like actions and returning new copies of immutable data is still just a fancy way of making something change. So in that case, I think Vue is just trying to stick to the most intuitive way most of us would, especially people who don't have like a heavy investment in functional programming, would naturally think how things would work. And I think that helps a lot. And it also has to do with how Vue is very often used in these simple enhancement cases where introducing too much of the functional stuff might actually get in the way in some cases. So there's that. And in this case, Vue is actually very similar to MobX, where we have this these mutable objects which are reactive, and when you mutate them, the system just knows things that have changed and will just do the right thing for you. And when you so this paradigm works pretty well for small to medium scale projects. And when you scale up, so the thing about Redux and all the Flux related patterns is they are invented to deal with scale. They're invented to handle the cases where you have very complex state changes, and you might also want to collaborate on a team with multiple developers. And in such cases, being explicit about what could potentially change and being able to track what has actually changed when you're debugging things becomes more important. But this is not intrinsically mutually exclusive with mutability. So that's kind of the problem what Vuex tries to tackle. So Vuex is obviously heavily inspired by Flux and Redux, but it is essentially a specialized version of Flux that plays well with mutability and Vue's reactivity system. So after all, I just feel like Flux and even Redux is more like a pattern of management state rather than a specific implementation. Right, that's why there are so many different implementations of Flux, because overall, the common goal that we want to achieve is to make state changes predictable, maintainable, and making the intentions of your code easier to be understood by another developer. I think if we can retain these characteristics, then it doesn't really matter if your state is being directly mutated or you're just returning a new copy of it. So one real benefit of returning immutable data copies is that you naturally get snapshots of every state change. So in Vuex, turns out stringifying a piece of state is fast enough in most cases. So unless you are doing full snapshots undo redo, most of the cases it's just fast enough to take a snapshot of the state that you want to track. And eventually, another reason why the React community values immutability is because it makes it easier to optimize React component rendering. Because when you use immutable data, your ship component update becomes trivial to write. You can just use pure components. But in Vue, there is no such problem because when you use mutable reactive state, the system already knows which components should be re-rendered. So there's no problem. The ship component update problem doesn't really exist. Which makes the argument for immutable data, again, less of a necessity. So that's kind of the whole paradigm difference. But overall, the final development experience is actually pretty similar when you use Vuex and Redux, because the only difference really just is how you change the state. In Vue.X, it's more straightforward, like you just mutate things. And it aligns better with how you would work with Vue without Vue.X. So that's the whole point. And further away, I think it's also interesting how something like RX and observables come into playing this, because I find that the core idea about Flux is users will send out actions, and these actions are actually somewhat like raw intentions, and there is a large chunk of work that the developer is still responsible for, is to transform these intentions into actual state mutations or state changes. So that process, when combined with asynchronous operations, becomes super complex. And I think that's kind of the place where RX would fit nicely into. So when you have the whole picture of users dispatch an action, somehow it gets transformed by RX into some final state mutation that you want to see happen. And the system just automatically maps those mutations into Vue updates. So this is a very high level picture of how I look at the problem. I don't think we have arrived at like a perfect solution yet. I still think like there are some unnecessary verbosity involved when you use all these flux patterns, and I think there will be something that's going to make it even easier. I think that somehow has to do with the limitation, because we're working inside JavaScript. So things might get a bit easier when you work outside of it, like you use a real functional language like Elm or Reason. That's kind of out of the scope of Vue, because Vue eventually is
right.
Still a JavaScript framework.
Sarah, what has your experience been like working with the data layer in Vue?
I think actually the reason why people keep re-quoting that quote that Evan quoted about the glasses is because it's very true. I think it's one of those things where you kind of know when you're at the point where you need something like Vue.X or Redux or something like that. For me, a lot of times it has the most to do with one of two things. Either I have a lot of siblings that need to speak to each other, and I'm starting to have to toss state around in a way that makes it harder to reason about, harder to read if you're looking back at the code, and makes the code just like a little bit more messy. So that's definitely a time when I would move over. And then another time is when I need to work with asynchronous data, that tends to be like, if I have to load a large sum of data and it has to go into a whole lot of different places, that almost immediately calls for a kind of Vue.X or Redux kind of implementation. I think it's actually like kind of amazing. Sometimes I like marvel. I think I had like tweets where I marvel at like how small Redux is for how intelligent it is. And again, it comes back to like my kind of appreciation for simple code, not over engineered code. I think sometimes people like to flex their muscles and like, oh, look at all this stuff I wrote, and like, oh man, like it's really hard to understand. I must be really smart. But I kind of like the opposite, where I think it's very, very challenging to write code that not only communicates to the browser, but also communicates to the people who are going to read it. And it is, again, just like what Evan is talking about in terms of like picking the features that are for the most amount of use cases and not making things bloated. I think the way that you write things, you can write it like so terse and, you know, be so proud of yourself for like the smallest amount of lines of code. But that's not really legible for other people who are maintaining it. On the other hand, you can write it in this like really verbose way where you like passing state, like, you know, a hover state through three components. Cool. And, you know, I think I've seen both cases. And the answer for me is usually somewhere in between. So I would never say that there's a silver bullet for data handling. It usually comes with the complexity of whatever the situation is. So I steer clear of defining anything, but the web is a gray area and you use it when you need it.
Absolutely. And I can definitely echo what you're saying. There are a lot of very small libraries which do amazing things. And I actually definitely subscribe to RxJS's philosophy. I would love to have something like Rx, but in a much smaller package. It is quite a heavy payload. So one of our co-hosts is Ben Lesh, who is one of the core maintainers of Rx. I kind of wish that he's here and give us his take on it. We may have to bring you back, bring you guys back to have another conversation with him.
They'll like insert him like a footnote, like he'll just pop up like clicking or something. Like, hi, I'm Ben Lesh. I have things to say.
Yes.
In a banana suit.
Yes.
Yeah, in a banana suit.
Yes, he can be the modern web podcast Clippy. Yep. Every time Rx comes up, he just pops up from there. Yeah.
Could probably. You can animate that with the transition component.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about the onboarding process, right? Like I'm trying to think if we have like a team of five engineers and we're trying to introduce them to Vue, have them consider it as something they will adopt for their big project. How is the onboarding process? How has the onboarding process been for you, Sarah?
Actually, I think that this is really where Vue shines as well. I think actually the onboarding process is very streamlined. It's funny because people always start off with a hello world and you kind of have to do like the simplest things. But the way I started off explaining the usefulness of Vue was actually just going through using V4. Because just even doing that in vanilla JavaScript is less lines of code than it is in Vue. And I think like some of the really, really quick bindings that you can do, vModel and, you know, vBind and, you know, all of the click handlers and all of those things, especially for people who already know ES6 and like have some familiarity with of some of the power that we have available to us, you get to use that stuff right away and like right in the DOM. And I think that kind of manipulation just for rendering as a front end is enormous. So excitement goes a long way towards learning. I really believe that like it's hard to get excited. It's like a story. It's hard to get excited unless somebody picks up like something really, really interesting right at first. So typically when I've helped people onboard with Vue, I've gone for some of the stuff that is like low hanging fruit of front end that is kind of a pain to do either in vanilla JavaScript or some other framework or something, and shown how elegant it works in Vue. And that tends to be like the aha moment for, you know, 9 times out of 10 people go, oh, like that's really interesting. That makes it a lot easier to explain some of the other principles that, like, you know, there's a learning curve for everything. It's just like everybody has a different way of writing. Everybody, you know, everything is like a slightly different style. So, you know, even though Vue is a really beautiful framework, it takes some time to learn. And so that getting people hooked on some of the cool stuff that is available to them really helps.
Yeah. I think on our part, the most of the effort we spend is on the docs. We spend a lot of time refining our documentation. And I want to give a shout out to Chris Fritz, who's our curator of our docs.
He's amazing.
He does an amazing job just taking care of our documentation and improving stuff. But overall, I think we try to... we try to write our docs in a way that we don't assume too much about the user. Similar to how the framework itself is incrementally adoptable, we try to start the docs from a really small scope. We show you some really basic use cases, and then we go into these small sections where you can just try it out in your browser. You don't have to first set up a build tool pipeline or npm install like 200 packages just to get started. We give you this JS fiddle, you can just pull in from a CDN in your HTML file and you can start experimenting and seeing how things are made. And I think that kind of helps people instantly get what this whole, the core value of the library that it provides. Mm-hmm. And then whenever appropriate, we would touch upon things that people would probably, at this point, they would be thinking about, okay, how do I handle this? Then we would point them to the relevant section in the docs dealing specifically about that problem, like build tools and large-scale applications and all that. So I think this is, I think good docs is probably a very important factor on youth adoption. We've heard multiple times people saying it's good. And funny enough, because there were several books out there about Vue in both US and China, and a lot of feedback I heard from people is like, why do you even need to buy the book? Just read the docs. it's good enough. So yeah, sometimes I feel sorry for the book authors, but...
Yeah, I mean, the guide is really, really well written. I think you can actually spend an afternoon and go through the guide and actually start to feel like you are getting somewhere, you know, just through reading and doing the examples on your own and stuff like that, which I think is unique, you know, that's kind of like the Rolls Royce of docs. Because a lot of times you read a bunch of docs and then you're like, okay, now I need to like have a shot or something and like process all of this stuff. I've never felt like that with the Vue docs where like, I felt like it was kind of like reading a book. You could just keep going and go through everything. So that's good.
Cool. Well, we're running short on time. But before we wrap up, I would love to ask, how can other people contribute to Vue? What will help the core team?
So right now, we are actually, we're spreading a little thing on our projects because we have many of them, but luckily, we're also seeing more and more PRs on fixing stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think similar, probably that's the same problem for all the like popular open source projects is the amount of work that we spend on triaging issues is very time consuming. We already pretty aggressively handle our issue process, but still, there would be cases where it would be really helpful if people can like help provide better reproductions, help testing the problem on different environments, and even better submit failing test cases or fixes. I mean, pull requests are always welcome. We are also I'm also thinking of doing a better job of onboarding more contributors because the 2.0 code base could be a little bit intimidating for users who haven't had experience with working on large scale JavaScript projects. So this has been on my mind for a while, and hopefully we will have something like a contributor handbook that kind of walks you through how, if you want to submit a PR to Vue, this is what you should go through. Hopefully that will bring even more contributors. We're already seeing a growing rate of PRs. I'm very happy about that, but I think we can get even more.
Great.
And he has a Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
We definitely have to keep that one in mind for the show notes.
Yeah.
so you can give him money.
Oh, that would be a helpful way to contribute too. Yeah.
Cool. Great. Well, thank you all very much. If people would like to learn more about Vue and learn more about your work, Sarah, how can people find you on the web, Sarah?
Oh, yeah. I have a Twitter account. It's Sarah_Edo, like the Japanese print. And I am coming out with a front end. I haven't even told Evan this. I'm going to do a front-end master's workshop on Vue coming up in June. And then I'll do a couple of other kind of Vue workshops. I'm working on some kind of online content for Vue as well, but probably just like mostly I have a lot of code pens where I play around with Vue and explain things that I'm doing with it. So CodePen is a really good place to find me. So I'm SDRAZ on CodePen.
Cool. And Evan, how can people find you on the web?
So my Twitter handle is the spelling of my Chinese name. It's Youyuxi. Really hard to remember. But the easier account to remember is just at Vue.js. That's the official Vue.js account. And we will be retweeting useful resources and posting new releases, announcements. So if you're interested in Vue.js, you should definitely follow that account. We're also having a conference in Poland later this year, and that's in June. And we're actually starting to sell tickets very, very, very soon. So you can find more details at conf.vjs.org.
Yeah, and I'll be there as well.
Oh, yeah. Sarah's going to be speaking. Yes.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you all very much. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us on iTunes. It really helps. You can find more Modern Web podcasts and meetups on Twitter at modern.web and on the web at modern-web.org. We'll see you soon in the next episode.
Show for you.